Of course, you know from this book here, I'll point out to you that there are a number of them over here for purchase afterwards, after the event. Raphael was born in Israel, and this is his first book, and I believe his first occasion singing from it in public here in Sebastopol. So we are very grateful for his presence with us tonight. Thank you so much for coming, and mazel tov.
Thank you very much, everyone, for being here. It's very touching that you all made it. I'm so glad the rain stopped. And I'd like to start. Thank you for the introduction, by the way. It was short and sweet, the way I like it. And I'd like to start with two poems that go back to when my daughter was about 11, 12, 13. There'll be a few scattered throughout. And it was the title poem for the book. The book is called Songs from a Small Universe, and it derives that name from the poem Small Universe. And this is how it goes. I think I'll try using the mic. I'm not sure how audible. Am I very audible over at your end? A little bit more. My voice is a little strange, so I'll try the mic. We'll see what happens.
Small Universe. Is that too loud? Is that okay? I inhabit a small universe. It extends just beyond the tip of my nose to my fingertips, which are often to be found in a bowl of warm sudsy water or hanging children's clothes. Over the years we've moved, and so heartstrings now stretch to Europe and Asia, Africa, Australia. I sweep my porch while a thrush bounces in a bush. On a clear night, I get lost in the Milky Way.
If at any point you either want to hear something again, or comment on it, or ask me a question, and you have the courage to do so, then good for you. No, I
much prefer it that it's a dialogue, that it's not just, you know, I love sharing the poems, but it's even nicer when people respond in some way. So feel free at any point, okay? Doesn't matter how silly or whatever it might sound, it's always good food for all of us. This next poem is another side of being, those of you who may have been a single parent or parented with your partner away a lot of the time, and it's called Ground to a Pulp. We're not talking about fruit puree here, perhaps we are, I don't know. Been stood on my feet for hours, washing dishes, cooking, washing more dishes, not counting the shopping on the way home. And yes, I'm bound to end the day washing dishes. There's only the two of us, yet plates and cups magically sprout on countertops, tables, easy chairs. Chores used to be something to rush through ASAP to more urgent things like movies, email, you name it. Now, wading through tiredness and water, I settle. Child's absorbed in homework, cat's content. This is a good task. I am doing well to serve the moment. Tell me, what's more important? It took a few years for that to dawn on me. I was resenting all those dishes. This next poem is called Brother's Hands. I only have one brother, which is a good thing, because my father only had two hands, so we could hold one each. And it takes place in the land of my birth, Israel, which at that time was a very young country, very young pioneering country, and it is, you know, any place is no longer the same after 50 years, half a century, good grief. Brother's Hands, it's a kind of tribute to my father, really. Two brother's hands snuggled in his giant palms, gazing at all those grown-up hairs on his arms. A step after tired step, we recross ancient fields, climbing beyond the green and red poppies to our day's end. By excited early morning cries, as he points out smooth green Roman glass, scattered in the furrows, turned by the plough of the Arab and his horse. Our yelps of delight on finding four small squares or more of coloured stone spawned by two millennia villa floors. Clasped hands, glass and tiles, all still flame far, far brighter than that Mediterranean sun. I'd like to share two poems that are not in this book, hopefully will be in the second book, but they're about the stars, and I think we get gorgeous views in a lot of West County, especially, of the sky, even in between the rain. And this first one, I think, is, let's see, it's called When I Look at the Stars. When I look at the stars, I hardly know their names, the upturned W, a dragon's tail. I just stare and stare at the starriness. Countless worlds scattered in bright patterns and curves, emitting stories that travel light years to return us to ourselves. Curious, really, I might have told a cat beside me, a marvellously arching back and curling tail, coiling and dipping, or the crickets, their ringing under and over tones, constellating lunar rhythms, or the twinkling airplane lights rapidly gobbling night's canvas, or the tingling chill on my cheek, gnawing into bones, or the sudden scuttle in the brush. But I didn't. I slipped them all into my pocket and brought them inside to share with you.
Mm-hmm. Rafael, can you read that one more time?
Start with the stars.
All right. Can I? It's a question. Okay. When I look at the stars, I hardly know their names. The upturned W, a dragon's tail. I just stare and stare at the starriness. Countless worlds scattered in bright patterns and curves, emitting stories that travel light years to return us to ourselves. Curious, really, I might have told a cat beside me, a marvellously arching back and curling tail, coiling and dipping, or the crickets, their quiet ringing under and over tones, constellating lunar rhythms, or the twinkling airplane lights rapidly gobbling night's canvas, or the tingling chill on my cheek gnawing into bone, or the sudden scuttle in the brush. But I didn't. I slipped them all into my pocket and brought them inside to share with you. This next one's called Necklaces. You'll notice some similarities, but here we go. You scattered your finest necklaces across the sky, dewdrops deftly hung on spider strands, pearls, dazzling patches of night. Thousands of crickets chorus up to the lights, bathing the listener in thick waves as refreshing as the first swim, as a season's first swim. How long have I been lulled and cosseted by the World Wide Web, paying only lip service to these gems? I think I'm going to do that again for my own benefit, if nobody else's. If you'll bear with me. Necklaces. You scattered your finest necklaces across the sky. Dewdrops deftly hung on spider strands. Pearls dazzling patches of night. Thousands of crickets chorus up to the lights, bathing the listener in thick waves as refreshing as a season's first swim. How long have I been lulled and cosseted in the World Wide Web, paying only lip service to these gems?
Thank you.
I guess, you know, nothing against World Wide Web. I use it a lot myself. And it could be all the distractions in our lives, really. And there are many. Okay. Sometimes people think a poem's finished, but it's a moving target. I find it's always changing. And this one was called Creature until 2 days ago. It's now called Monster. I used to keep the creature strutting in a cage. Boom, boom, boom. Start again. Okay. The next line is significant. It was, I was fully in control, which I rarely am. Monster. I used to keep a creature strutting in a cage. I was fully in control. I almost had it tamed. But it kept on growing stronger till it could prise apart the bars, roll its bloodshot eyes and dragon tongue, poke its wild head through the bars, howl and holler in its rage. A monster used to keep me pacing in a cage. It treated me so badly it wouldn't hear my cries when I hollered and I raved. So I started corresponding with the monster in the cage. Now the monster lets me know real fast when things need to change. And the cage, well, the cage, it's bigger and brighter, painted with licorice stripes, and the bars are plenty wide for us both to slip inside. Okay. This one's called The Rack. I had this wonderful interview that Kyle Radereau from the local paper Sonoma West kindly gave me, and one of the things we talked about was how a poem, at least from my perspective, has to be emotionally true, but it doesn't have to be factually true. And this poem is actually factually true, for The Rack. You are the racking cough buffeting my body. This is not what I want to talk about. Yet here you are, inescapable, turning night's river into a quagmire of breaths and cries. Rasp, splutter, gasp. Rasp, splutter, gasp. Like fish eyes rolling over, solar plexus vainly pumping. What do you want? I want to skin you and gut you until you long for a peace not of this world. I want to toss you and shake you like a leaf clinging in fall. I want to hone your vocal cords to such a fine pitch so only I will hear your calls. Mm-hmm. And on that marvelously light note, the next one's called Drink to Thine Eyes. And my musicians, I think, heard me say this before, but when I was young and I looked at older folk, I couldn't imagine how they got to look the way they did. I was totally convinced that I would never, ever look like them. You know what I mean? Now we are then, so what do you do? And this poem is about that. Drink to thine eyes. Hairline receding like a tide, never to return. Pitted moon craters under my eyes, on the dark side of course. Dry, sallow skin, thin, wrinkled lips, yellowing cap teeth, uncontoured chin. You young'uns thinking, ha, not me. I'll never look like you when I'm old. Face facts, face values, face masks. My eyes won't lie. I blink in a mirror as you slowly dissolve me in your tea. Poems tend to have that kind of bittersweet feel, like good chocolate, some say, but this next one is called Stolen Love. It's a combination of a dream my daughter shared with me when she was pretty young. As many of you know, I lost my wife, my partner, from cancer about 7.5 years ago in 2002. And this, I mean, I guess it flavors a lot of my work, as it naturally would do. And, you know, if you've explored, you have to explore somewhere loss and grief in order, I think, to experience joy and the other feelings. You can't get one without the other. So if it happens to happen to you, it's not a bad thing. I think we've all experienced loss. And I also remember feeling immediately after her death such tremendous love. It was like Winnie the Pooh had been left a cupboard full of honey jars. And I felt our lives were well stocked with honey to take us through many a long winter. So this one's called Stolen Love. Our love went down to the sea to live in the crack of a cliff. Keep me alive with candles and gold, cried her soul. Keep me alive with burning gold. So we searched high and low for candles and gold. Shiny keys blinded me, a grand piano I bought, whose black and white tones loosed music of morning. But our daughter instead stole handfuls of candles, fistfuls of gold. Only need and love crammed for her pockets, with no money to pay. She left the store and crossed the street to sit and wait. Guards rushed over garbling. Did you see the thief? Did you see the thief? Oh yes, she smiled, her wise womanly smile. He went running that way. Mm-hmm. So laden she entered deep green woods, but the forest was dark. So she came back to the cliffs, watching and waiting, waiting and watching, skywards a crimson gash, changing to dismal black, ebbing and flowing, below slithering sea, slapping and gullying, flapping about slippery green rocks, momentarily fleeing, while crabs came out to delicately feast with twin forks upon the glad tide. The gash burst open, pouring torrents of red on the sea's furrowed face, lightening her ripples into stunning, burning gold. Um, We had a number of overnights when my daughter was in middle school, and they were great fun for her and great fun for me too, having half a dozen young people experimenting with lipstick and eyeshadows and makeup in the big bathroom, and all I could hear was a conversation, of course. And it started, she went to Salmon Creek Middle School, and so we started out there exploring the creek, and this is how it goes, the overnight. Six girls wade and clamber past poison oak, rocking logs across the creek echoes laughter. They squat on rocks, settle on gospel. Haunting, undulating notes rise and fall. It's a pizza, chatter, play, makeup, overnight. Trampoline voices spin and somersault. Startling suspended sunset, gleeful rolling down sandhills, hurtling wings, roaring waves, dune grass dew billowing softly as hair, reminds me of dearest you, shelter too, such a gracile flower. So we've had so many questions, and I'm whistling through these poems so I can express a trade.
It's not so much a question as a comment, but I'm wondering if, for me, maybe it's the fidelity of the mic, if you could just lower it a little bit. I think it's
too loud.
It's not too loud, it's just a little distorted. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And I think it interferes with the music.
Right, okay. We'll try. Is that better?
Yeah.
I lowered it. At the other poetry
Songster. I can finish with that quite easily.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would love to hear it.
Okay, you're on.
And I love you read your poetry so well. You know, you can read it on a piece of paper, but it's great to hear you.
Thank you. You're kind. Throw me an extra dollar at the end. You're right there. Yes. Okay, anyone else?
When you were sitting on the porch with the cat, mm-hmm. you said curiously.
Curious, really.
Were you thinking of Alice in Wonderland? Because I could just see the Cheshire Cat.
Right. Yeah. It's great how people get all kinds of connections. It doesn't matter whether I intended it or not. What matters is what you come away with.
Curious, sir.
Now, the curious, really, of course, it's very British. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I wasn't consciously thinking of Alice, but that's a wonderful, whimsical feeling to come away with, yeah. Thank you, Beverly.
Is the sound
yeah.
ready?
Is it still?
Maybe holds it a little bit away from his mouth.
But you don't want it too close
right
to
back.
Sorry.
Yeah, right back.
Okay, good, good.
Maybe you can do Monster.
Monster again, the monster mash. Okay, let's see what was coming up. Yeah, okay, monster. Mm-hmm. I used to keep a creature strutting in a cage. Boom, it's gone out from, I'll have to restart that one.
Control.
That's the one line.
You knew it.
That's right, I did it twice. It's great when someone knows the line. Creature, take 25. I used to keep a creature strutting in a cage. I was fully in control, I almost had it tamed, but it kept on growing stronger. Till it could prise apart the bars, poke its wild, tormented head, roll its bloodshot eyes and dragon tongue, howl and holler in its rage. A monster used to keep me pacing in a cage. It treated me so bad, it wouldn't hear my cries when I hollered and I raved. So I started corresponding with a monster and the cage. Now the monster lets me know real fast when things need to change. And the cage? Well, the cage, it's bigger and brighter, painted with licorice stripes, and the bars are plenty wide for us both to slip inside. The form. So this was this poem is an example. It didn't happen in the way I describe, but the emotional experience is true. And just some background. It's called The Fall. An unrelenting wind blustered and bubbled under our skins, the kind that grinds and frays your nerves, you wryly smiled as we hiked up some scree. An uneasy feeling ran down my spine just before I caught your cry, rolling downhill, head over heels like a rag doll. My stomach flipped as I careened to find one leg wrapped around a rock, strained lines, whitened lips, wildly staring eyes, a trap doe. I freed your limb, made a splint, inwardly begged to take your pain, leaving you there with water and makeshift shade. Stretched braided bonds, twang taut heartstrings, don't belong, you'd call between clenched teeth. While I sought help, you faced yourself. Years on, fetching lettuce and radish from our garden bed, you limp and halt. Without warning, your swirling eyes and deepest windswept smile burst out. This next one, Savannah, is dedicated to a young person in this community who died unexpectedly at the age of 10. And she had, I'm not very good on names, I think it's called an embolism, where you have a burst vein or artery in your brain. And she may have had a weak heart valve, but nobody knew about it. Anyway, she had an older sister. My daughter and her sister were in the same little orchestra for a period of time. And at the memorial service, I was so impressed by the family, and this gift was given to me in relation to her. And I want to explain one other thing. Savannah, as well as being her name, obviously means the plane, but also there's a sparrow, a North American sparrow named the Savannah sparrow, which is kind of plain plumage. And the sparrow comes in at the end of the poem. Savannah. Open as a windswept plane, lit by monkey tricks and smiles, scudding clouds and chattering trees, her 10 tender infectious years spread tendrils across a far wider, deeper swath. As aunts and uncles through tears and cracks recalled how she would embrace upon a wall in her new room a gazelle's mounted head and spread around its neck a feather boa blue, and how with her cousin she'd play Siamese twins and a pajama set made one out of two. Savannah quietly stole past our do not trespass private property red warning signs and swiftly sliced our chain-link fences. All at once, shy deer and unfamiliar creatures appeared in our garden, brown eyes begging, how will you treat us on this short, short day? A plain plumed sparrow flashed through sunlit woods and coods, its steady trill declaring, dare I dare? Dare I dare? How dare I not on this short, short day? Boy, what do you do after that? Here's a short one. I email this to those of you who are on my email list. This is about as commercial a plug as I get. So if you'd like to receive invitations with a poem each time, under no obligation to come, but you might want to read the poem. This is the one I sent out last time. And let me know. I should have a sheet ready, but I haven't. If you want to hear of future events. Crest. Between the calling of the shores of sleep and wakefulness, a rhythmic pounding surges in my ears. A deep syllabic breath pours your silent name into the sighing wind. Almost a haiku, huh, Tim?
Or Tampa. You have to read that one again.
Crest. Between the calling of the shores of sleep and wakefulness, a rhythmic pounding surges in my ears. A deep syllabic breath spills your silent name into the sighing wind. So, song stuff. And then I think we'll move into, might be one more, we'll see, but we'll move into our more musical. I am going to a song stuff, yeah. Great, it's wonderful having people to keep you on track.
Yes.
This one came from the summer, listening to a bird in the back garden, and I hope it carries over, for me it does anyway, through the winter as well, till the next time I hear its call. Songster. Oh sweet loquacious songster, I am your eager ear, riding your trills and streams. Be my companion, so when your notes have risen beyond range and fallen into silence, broken only by the leaves, by the wind weighing on the leaves, I will not forget my pledge made during your ecstatic births. Sing to me, sing, so my heart may turn in twilight's ebb, and through the night be drawn along liquid ways until your dawn song breaks its banks again. So I think it's a little taxing to have so many words flowing in one time, so how about we change this to me? No? You're saying no? Like there's something else?
Very accessible.
Yeah? Okay. I sometimes find I'm flooded, you know what I mean? But I could do one more, then we'll move into the... I mean, there's still the poem, so just a musical form. Okay. I did this one recently, relatively recently, at a brunch, so Carl, you'll have to excuse me. But a couple of winters ago, I had a wood pellet stove, and there was a great shortage of the stuff. and Frisellinos across the way, they actually call people up to say the truck had arrived. It had come all the way down from Canada. I mean, people were desperate, right? And this was my experience on the day I got that call. It's called, and I gave them a copy. They really enjoyed it. It's called the Great Winter Wood Pellet Rush of 07. Drop the broom in mid-sweep, grab my breakfast bowl, forgot all else and left home, a rush of adrenaline drawing me to the store, kindled in the instant of that call, come for those bags while they last. Driving in, wondering, how many dare I ask for? 6? 10? Paid for the goods, precious seconds ticking by, cars revving in the yard, all lined up for that last pallet. Mm. 5 bags apiece, quieted all questions. Hurried, satisfying thumps, landing in the truck. Driving away, feeling triumphant, yet guilty that I can take so much more than my need. Perhaps the price is higher than the tallest pines, lower than the earth's fiery bowels, wider than our appetites, as slender as the bonds that bind us here. And what if that same fever, that same unfulfillable need, were to grip and drive me to the heaped pallets of truths lying unsold in my own backyard. This next one, the last word is yours. It's the last poem in the book. Is this any better, Anne?
Yeah.
Sound like? And Anne, I'm sure you won't mind me saying this. We worked for a while teaching at Santa Rosa Middle School, and worked for a very long time, if I may say so. Congratulations. I was there for a short time. I'd been asked to take over a classroom, a special day class, with 1 day's notice, and it was a testing experience. But I met some interesting kids and interesting adults. And one of these kids, Eric, I don't know if you remember him, he was an African-American kid from Oakland, and I think he'd missed out on some years of education, and he wasn't easy for schools to set up in particular ways. They didn't find it easy to handle him. He'd been at Slater, and then he was transferred to Santa Rosa, and he was put into what's called an MR class for kids with mental retardation. And he was really quick and bright. I'm not sure that he actually belonged there. And he started coming into my classroom for a couple of classes. And this poem is just, I wrote it thinking about him. It's not him. He's a young man now. I've no idea what he's doing, but he kind of inspired it. The last word is yours. we're going to do four of the poems in the book that we set to music, if my voice can take us there. And there is a section at the back of the book that are actually songs with chords. We're not seeing them tonight, though. All right. Unless you want to invite us for a house concert or something, we'll consider it. Yes. The first one is called Kings, and roundabouts where I live at a certain time of the year, it's Sonoma County, right, high tech. The crows have figured things out. They watch the walnuts fall down, and they wait for the trucks to drive by and crack them open for them, and they swoop down and take them to the apple orchard nearby. So that's the basic inspiration for it. Kings.
Can I just test our balance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want to overpower you.
Have gone high tech. I think I'm probably too loud for you.
No.
Because you're hearing the monitors.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. All right, Kings, here we go. The local crows have gone high tech. You have, let me dispel it. It's about more to do with fish than other things, but I don't know if you've fallen into this ever in your relationships, but I do frequently, and that's kind of making the same mistake, emotional mistake, over and over again. You swear, I'm going to catch myself next time, that's not going to happen again, and then next time, boom! It happens again. So, hooked is the metaphor. Reacting, or will it always be like water flowing through a fisherman's net? Would that I'm sorry could ever recompense? Would that I'm sorry could ever recompense? By my own bobs, I wildly thrash. slam shut. Smack by my own webs I wildly fret. Rivers of sadness overflow. Rivers of sadness overflow. What but this cry? Women alleviate this awful metal taste. Would that I'm sorry could ever recompense. Would that I'm sorry could ever recompense. What but this cry can ease my hammering to a dulcimer, which she made herself, and she plays other instruments besides the one that we're hearing tonight. This is just a small sample of her multi-instrumental talent, and it's called Sky God, and it's another of these poems that was inspired by looking up at the sky, and at night, I hasten to add. And yeah. Chest and tail switching towards our earth. No glinting eye or crown. I dare to ask my prancing lord, and he did so reply. This night, though blind, I lead the round, the headless dance away. Barking and howling, touch me not. Metallic fireflies split fleetly through my skies. Yet silently I glide, silently glide I. Burning, blinking city lights pay no heed to circadian singing, cicadas fulsome night. Yet silently I lead the dance, silently lead I.
Only after weeping will
dancing, straining to your pain. Only after weeping will you see me dancing, straining to your pain. As well, and he still does, I'm sure she would be a lot of fun. The last poem song we want to do tonight is called Bowed Oak, and all around here you see these oak trees that in spring and summer they have no leaves, you just see the bare limbs. And they seem to go on year after year after year without anything apparently going on, though I'm sure they still give shelter to many birds and lots of insects. And at the time I wrote this, it was about, I guess, a year after Deborah, my partner, died. And the tree kind of just lived, the feelings I had fitted my view of the tree, and the song, I never dreamt that these poems would be sung. That happened years and years later. These poems were written mostly 2003 to 2005, so it's a great joy to play with Diana and Moon, and the music gives it a completely different feel as well from the original, which I'm grateful for. It pushes it more in the major key direction than the minor. And hope you enjoy it too.
This is a little bit of an experiment. I've never played my harmonium up on there. But people complain, usually it's on the floor, and people complain that they can't see it. So they're hearing it, but they can't see it. So we're going to try. No, I just need to look.
Okay. Michelle Block.
Thank you all for being here and sharing this evening together. And we've got some announcements to wrap up the evening. And anyone who's interested in a book, I'm sure I can rustle up a pen and meet you over in that general direction. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming out. Thank you, Raphael. Thank you to our talented musicians. This is wonderful. So, many of you, but perhaps not all of you, know the drill. We have a donation bowl over on the counter here. We split the contents of that bowl with our performers tonight to help their work, and we also reserve some of it so that we can continue to make this space available for events like this in the future. We hope you will come to events like this in the future and others here in the store. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. It's a pleasure to host you all. And thanks again to Raphael.
I would just like to say that it's a wonderful thing for a small town like Sebastopol to have such a wonderful bookstore, to have it be such an important part of the community.
Yeah.
There are the books.
Grab them.